Welcome to another episode of the Speech Uncensored podcast. We are right in the middle, or I should say the beginning, of a new series on how I practice. And today, my guest is Ingrid, and she's here to talk about how to structure evidence-based practice for patient-centered success. And I love this topic. It is one of the things I'm really passionate about, one of the things that has transformed my own practice. And so I love meeting another like-minded SLP that's very passionate about this topic and wants to spread the good word about how we can all do so much better in our practice. This is going to be such a great episode. Like, I'm excited. I don't care if anybody else likes it. I love it. All right. So welcome, Ingrid. I'm so happy to have you here. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm so appreciative of having your invitation to discuss this kind of experience. Really, I've been a clinician I'm a first generation American. I've grown up in a space where being considered was really tough because, like, when it came to my background and the understanding of my father's healthcare journey and what he has experienced, it was a lot of, oh, wow, there's not a lot of research for you. So I started to step outside of my own concepts a lot and outside of research a lot and started to pull from other spaces so that I had the benefit of being able to say, hey, let's try to do this care a little bit more sensitively to people that aren't from this country or have a different concept of this country. And it made me evaluate the research quite a bit because I knew that the research was a little bit narrow. And it changed the way that I practice, and it allowed me to be kind of an expert in the way that I did it because I was so ritualistic and centering around the patient because I just understood that things were a little bit broken in our practice in comparison to our patients, especially as we advanced through the diversity of it all. I mean, when you're exposed to patients that have no representation in research, you start considering, well, what other researched elements can you pull from to help them? And what kind of things can you do to support their growth in their own personal desires? And that's what I did as a professional for the 12 years that I practiced and how much I focused my energy because I would just cared so much about making sure that people got what they wanted out of speech therapy and, you know, what we do as scientists.
I love how you talked about we're trained when we're presented with a clinical problem to go to the research. So when you experience that, you went to the research, you're like, okay, what does that say about this particular problem? And what you found was a lack, a gap, an absence of pertinent research for your situation, what you were dealing with. And so what do we do when we experience that? And you turned to patient-centered care, which is one of our evidence-based practices. So I want you to tell me a little bit more about kind of that merging, because I think that sometimes we think that person-centered care or patient-centered care is it's not evidence-based or something, because we feel like we associate getting objective data, like numerical data, as being evidence-based, and anything that's a lot more subjective is something else, something other.
I think when it came to reimbursement, I think that's why we became more quantitative as a science, as a discipline. I mean, that's most of healthcare, and that does require a lot of objectivity. But when you're really looking at trying to improve quality of life, which is the primary space of speech pathologists, we're really looking to improve quality that's a disconnect with reimbursement spaces. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of put ourselves in a rock and a hard place kind of dynamic. And ultimately, when I considered us as a qualitative space, I was able to branch out. I was able to ultimately put the patient first. Consider other researched spaces. I did the evaluations that were required for reimbursement, of course. But I also documented within those spaces that it didn't actually support saying this individual or this characteristic is outside of the norm because it was a culturally or diagnostically outside the norm space. So mm-hmm. when it comes to intervention, I was able to have a little bit more freedom because I'm like, this is about being normative. This is about centering on what we all consider to be the center lane. But the reality is we're a diverse country. And we have decided to ingratiate diversity within our space. So I can identify that I've done this test and you fail. But I can also say this test wasn't meant for your particular norm. It's actually for a norm that is outside of your diagnostic space, is outside of your cultural space. And I can move my intervention closer to you if I take into consideration both of those aspects. Yes, I want you to be successful in this country. So there's some norms you have to pick up and adjust to. And I'm happy to help you with that. But I'm also going to say, what's more comfortable for you? At the same time, it's a duality of the intervention that provided that success for any given patient that I intervened with, because I was like, if you're already successful as an adult and I'm trying to normalize you within what is the parameters for success, I'm going to have to take a step back and just experience you because you don't fit the norm, but you're still a successful individual. If you're a child, I have to give you a little bit of a different experience to say, I'm going to give you both tools. I'm going to make you successful in your own space, and I'm going to give you success within what you need to accomplish in the normative data of the academic sector, because those things matter too. So I have to do both in a way, which can be challenging for some SLPs. But it was the only way that I could be thoughtful for the marginalized or the minority sector while still acknowledging that you need to be assimilated enough to get your way through academics because that hasn't adjusted. Speech pathology might be beating academics in that aspect. So I was pushing it and I was pushing it for both spaces to acknowledge you, but also say you need those tools too, because I needed them. I needed them. And I wasn't a great assimilator. I'm still not probably in a lot of sectors. I still have a lot of issues in that assimilation factor, which has impacted my career overall. But I recognize the importance of it, you know what I mean? So it's something that we all need to kind of pay attention to, is the duality of that. So you can still be patient-centered, still be evidence-based in, you know, branching out into other sectors, but also register, I kind of need to do both. I need to help you be successful in your space, and I need to help you be successful in the space of academics for children. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like that you're understanding how important that duality is. It's not one or the other. It's that we have to give up one and focus on the other, that there can be both. And there should be both for people who go between both worlds almost. And so for people who don't go between those worlds, they need to know that there are many, many people out there that do, that transition all kinds of behaviors and language patterns as they enter and exit different spheres.
Absolutely. And it's why I look at like the SLP profession, not to say let's diversify the profession, let's diversify the practice. Because yes, we're going to absolutely be successful at targeting the issues that make what is central, normative, and more centered with how we assess people. We are absolutely skilled in that. But the problem with our practice is that we want to force everyone into that space instead of giving people the duality. Let's give you both. Let's normalize you in your own space as well as give you the resource to be successful in your own subset. Our country, unfortunately, is so diverse, and it's unfortunate because we have to expand ourselves to that diversity, which in my experience has been really wonderful, but it's not really wonderful for everyone because I might be a mom, I might be a wife, I might be overwhelmed with all the things I've taken on. I'm so burdened with everything and I'm so tired and I can't do it all. And I get that. So it can be an unfortunate experience of saying, now you have to carry on two things or three things or five things. And So that makes for the practice to be really heavy, because you want to be quality for people, but at the same time, you have so much on your plate. So it makes it harder. However, when I think and consider all of the facets of speech-language pathology, I register that we're supposed to be a qualitative science, not quantitative. We're not supposed to be so structured and in the box. We are supposed to say, I see you, I recognize you. It's why we're appreciated as a science. It's because we're supposed to be so patient-centered, so thoughtful, so considerate. And when we don't do that well, we get really aggressive negative feedback, and it's problematic. And it's seen by all of us as speech pathologists that, oh my goodness, we're not doing this well, actually. We're having gaps where people want to be seen, and we're not doing that. So if we care about patients, we do have to diversify a bit more and say, I'm interested in taking you into consideration. How do I do that while also teaching you the skills that are needed to make you successful if you choose to assimilate? The choice to assimilate is for everyone. Not everyone does that. We have not recognized that people are choosing not to, and still we continue to practice our discipline like everyone should assimilate and should be within the normalization of the research. And we are causing harm by doing that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's so refreshing to hear another SLP acknowledge how qualitative our field is. Because I feel like there's such a big push to be recognized by the science community by focusing on really hard data, very qualitative stuff. And it is definitely part of the work that we do. It's an important part of the science that we participate in every day as we do our work and as we're clinicians, but not at the expense of forgetting that we're working with a person. They are the center of the intervention that we're doing, and we can't treat them like a data machine almost. There's so much more to what's happening and going on with them than that. And so I really appreciate your view on that, and I'm just so glad to hear it. I'm so glad, because it feels sometimes we should just, I don't know, just be hard-driven scientists all the time. And I love that for us. Yes, let's do that, but not at the expense of making amazing gains with our patients. And the type of work that we do that's centered around eating, such a social and personally important event, intertwined with so many cultural significant things, and communication. Like, these are so intertwined with who a person is, how they represent themselves to the world, their identity. And we want to go in there and make it like a data machine or something like that. So I really love that it is not sacrificing our place in the scientific community to say that we do exceptionally important and difficult qualitative work.
I love us as SLPs. I appreciate the fact that we feel so strongly about our expertise. And I think there's a part of it that's supposed to negate our imposter syndrome. I know this stuff, and I feel confident in this stuff, and it reduces my imposter syndrome because I've been doing this stuff. But what makes us really good is always being inquisitive, is always being curious, is always being scientific, but comfortable with the fact that we're exploring something instead of defining something. There is a really great understanding within our discipline that I've always understood, is that we have our parameters. We know what our objectives are. It is to make your life more comfortable within our society. That's the bottom line for speech language pathology. But the reality is, what can I do to make your life more comfortable for you just as you are? Because it might not be about our society, especially if you're part of the space of our society that isn't necessarily embraced or welcomed or understood or studied. And if you're not part of that, you still want to be seen. So if there's a majority that is embracing assimilation, great. I know exactly how to get you there. I still want to study how you want to get there, for sure. I want to figure out what is your desire to get there, but you still have the same goal that my science does. But what if you're one of these individuals that are like, I don't want to assimilate. I want to just be really fulfilled in who I am and kind of break the mold a little bit and be outside of what is normative in our society. And it's those people that I've always catered to, coming from a space of being marginalized and being, you know, first generation, and seeing that I'm like, ooh, I don't know that I fit necessarily in the SLP space. I'm not the 92%. I'm a 3%er. I'm like part of the part that's like, I'm the smallest of the smallest. So what does that mean for me? What does that show up as? What does that look like? And can I be embraced like that? Will the 92% appreciate my expertise of being this 3% that embraces differences and practice that way for a decade and plus? Like, how will that be ingratiated into our practice? Because as much as we're great at the majority, we're so bad at the marginalized. We're not doing well there. So how can we fix that? Because we want to be great 100% of the time. How do we fix that? And my practice is like, I know how we fix that. We have to break the mold. We have to break the conception that evidence-based practice needs to fit with forcing everyone into the norm. It isn't actually that way. And can we be okay with that?
Yeah, I think we fail to recognize that we're applying a norm that's been normalized on a certain segment of the population to people that it was not, who were not part of that norming sample. So why would we do that? Like, we think that this sample of the population represents the population, but it's heavily skewed to one group within the population. And then we just want to fit everybody mm-hmm. else inside of that. And that's not how that works. So yeah, why would we push somebody into a normed group that was never part of that norming sample? Like that's illogical.
I feel the reality, and this is really about the history of the United States of America. Like when we think about research, it's a slow process. Research in general takes time and process. It's really deeply vetted. So we need to consider our country has decided to diversify since 1964, but 1964 is when it was signed on a piece of paper. How often does signing on a piece of paper really, ooh, man, it knocks us into the right space? It doesn't. You have to change an entire society. So there was lots of resistance to the paper signing. And research is not outside of that. There's a lot of people that were not interested in focusing on the people that were being ingratiated into the society as equal. And because of that, science is limited for those individuals in our society, because it's still, even to this day, an argument of normalizing differences. Differences are a big deal for people that come in to this country that are wanting to be recognized. We want to say USA, it's so great. You can build and achieve your dreams no matter who you are. We like really want to lean into that. But there is a structure in which you need to do that. You have to fall in line with that. And if you don't, you're going to have a hard time. So that's what's been the biggest issue for SLPs, is recognizing our science really does say non-verbally, if you don't assimilate here, you're not going to succeed in our practice. And we're used to that. We're not used to diversifying the practice to say, oh my goodness, our practice actually needs to change. Instead, we say, DEI, let us get some diverse interventionalists and make them do the work. But it's not about diversifying the practice as clinicians. It's about diversifying the practice as providers. We are all responsible for being able to be a little bit more flexible, but we limit ourselves because we're like, it's so much work to do that. It was work for me to assimilate to the US concept as a first generation Haitian immigrant. I've been doing it since I was very young, so I have a head start, and I'm recognizing that. A lot of people from marginalized spaces have a head start. We have had to consider the norm or the assimilated space for our lifetime. So we're so successful at it. It makes us so much more compatible with pushing people in that space, but we also want to normalize ourselves. So we also have the success of being able to say, I'm going to identify African-American vernacular and make that a norm. And it's new and it's rare and it's not something that's common, but it's happening within literacy and linguistics. And even within our own practice, there are SLPs that are normalizing the divergency of that. The same with autistic individuals that are in our science, that are moving within this diagnosis, that are saying we can normalize this divergent space. We are choosing that, but we know that you're wanting us to assimilate. We recognize assimilation, but it shouldn't rely on those spaces that are what I consider the 8% or the minority or the marginalized, I think all of us in the practice can break open into it.
So you've been talking a lot about diversity in practice and what that does and doesn't look like. But I would love to dig a bit deeper and be kind of like, just really like explicit, because I'm like, I need like very obvious things. So what does diversity in practice look for the, like for the 92% who maybe are not exposed to having an assimilation experience or having to go through different environments in different ways?
So the how-to in that comes in the pullback of saying the research I have or the evidence base that I have is the number one rule. It ends up being a situation where how I practice has to come from the patient. When I look at a patient and I do my evaluation based on the standards and the reimbursement spaces, I know that I need to do that. So I'm going to execute it, of course. But when I'm going to intervene, I am going to do a lot of study. I'm not going to be a person that just assumes that I can create goals for you. I'm going to create goals on the first day because I need to, right? Like, this is normal. But I'm not going to assume that the goals are really your objective. So I have to continue to explore that after day one. And I've been privileged in my experience as a diverse individual that I've studied international reviews, international researches that have given me some level of knowledge in saying, maybe I need to question the objective that the S or the F is a super priority. If you're, let's say you're Filipino. Filipino individuals, they say things like pucking. I pucking hate it. You know, like there's that component when they're really trying to say an F, but that's not within their language subset. So they're going to say pucking all day. I pucking hate it, you know, and I love that. And I think that that's okay. And it's not my space to fix it because pucking is within the context of your language subset. So learning something as simple as that has affected me for decades. If I choose to learn consistently throughout my career, which doesn't mean you have to know it from day one. I think SLPs want to be like, I got that how-to immediately. That's not the reality of diverse intervention. It took me 39 years to be this diverse as a person, as a practitioner. Please don't think it's going to happen overnight, but be curious to study other perspectives and other ideas. And it's okay if you're starting from ground zero, but do it. Do it in the sense of what is normal for these other spaces that I'm exploring? What is normal for autistic people? How can I process autistic people? What is normal for deaf and hard of hearing? What is normal for the African American community? What is normal for transgenders? These are things that we have to consistently be okay with exploring. We don't have to be experts off day one. And I think SLPs anchor themselves to being the expert off day one. And that's a problem. We need to be students every day of our career.
Oh, Ingrid, don't call me out like that. It's so true. Because I feel like I go between the both. Like I want to walk into the therapy room having a really solid grasp of what I need to know to provide the best services for this individual. But at the same time, like I am a very curious person. I always want to learn something, which is why this field is so great for me, because we will never know everything. But I love that you really focus on diversity in practice isn't something that you're going to wake up one morning having mastered, that you're not going to go to a weekend seminar and come back fully ready to implement the most amazing diversity in practice you've ever seen, that it is a gradual step-by-step, moment-to-moment, like stair-step almost, that you add to with every interaction with not only your patients, but their family members, your colleagues, like your life in general. Like if you just open yourself up to having these experiences, you add to that knowledge bank little bit by little bit, that then you get to implement through your practice and keep building on.
Absolutely.
Day in and day out.
Absolutely. I feel we rush to expertise, and we do that because we feel insecure as a discipline.
Stop it, Ingrid.
If we comfortably accept our reality that it's okay to be unknowing, it's okay to be curious, and it's okay to consistently grow, we won't force people into norms. We will push people to being them their best selves in what is quality about speech therapy. And we care about quality of life. We're not PTs or even OTs in a space that is just quantitative. I have this number. I have this measurement. I know what you're doing for ambulation, all that stuff. When you're looking at cognition, when you're looking at language, when you're looking at swallow, there are so many different aspects that can be successful. If you maintain yourself and always being inquisitive and curious, you will create outcomes that you've never seen in research, because people can outdo the science every day, all the time. And the importance of being able to execute that is what makes it so fulfilling to be an SLP. And that's why I think we need to stay vigilant in being students of the practice.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. Gosh, Ingrid, it's almost like you have a podcast or something where you talk about these kinds of topics on the regular.
I think the reality of the podcast is it grows because it's maturing. It's taken some time because I'm a little bit, what can I say? I'm hyperverbal. So sometimes I'm a little messy in how I convey my messaging. But the reality of what I'm really trying to convey in that podcast, first episode, first season, second season, even though it was really brief, and in this third one, as I'm really actively moving in it, is the aspect of saying, hey, SLPs, be present in your practice. Don't consider that what you already know is enough for everyone that you're trying to intervene with. Consider that it's okay to be a student, and consider that it's okay to be inquisitive. Consider that it's okay to practice with a space of, I don't know. That doesn't make you less of an expert. It just makes you less of a dictator, because what's normal for someone, you can't define that. You're not built to do that. And you should be okay with that. You should be okay with the aspect of saying, I am not the definer of what you need to learn. I am the definer of how you need to get to where you want to be, because I'm more of an expert in this space than you are. So I know how to get you there through sheer knowledge and science and expertise. I can get you there, but I can't define where you're going. I have to say, I'm willing to learn where you want to go. And I'm willing to learn the best method in which to get you there. And if I have to go outside of my own practice of speech-language pathology, if I have to go into sciences like history or sciences like literacy or sciences like medical, psychological, if I need to go over there to help you get there, I'm doing it because I'm willing to make sure that I stay the expert in this process of your rehabilitation. Or your habilitation, if you're a student or you're young, I'm willing to go into any science I need to get you where you want to go. And it's really about submitting to that idea. And so in my personal practice, that's what I did, is submit to the idea that I understood where my sciences had strengths, and where my science had weaknesses, and where I needed to partner with other sciences. And I was okay with being a student, and I was okay with looking at my patient as the number one priority and saying, I can use this research to aid you. If it isn't going to aid you, then I need to look at other sciences to aid you. I need to focus on so many different things, but I am an expert. I'm okay with being an expert that still needs to learn. That is the biggest understanding of any SLP that I want to like really push out there. This number one cue of saying, I can still be an expert that needs to learn.
I love that. That is so, so important. And I feel like you described person-centered care like to a T. We are the expert on traveling with the person through the journey. They're the expert on where that journey is going and where it's ending up. And to me, that's person-centered care. Like they determine that destination, and we're the experts on how to get them there. And I just love how you described that. Like that makes a lot of sense for me.
It's taken me a long time to crystallize it. Because I'm saying that I like, oh my gosh, I had not been able to like focalize it really well for a long time, but that is what my practice was. It really was that. And I didn't know how to put it to words. So I'm appreciative of this discussion because I'm like, over time, I've had to be able to say, this is actually what's being done to make the success and reduce disparity in speech pathology, because disparity in speech pathology is 100% present with people that don't feel seen. They don't feel heard. They don't feel understood. And it's not been any of my patients, but I know it's experienced. And I wanted to crystallize, how do I help other SLPs see this is what we can do and not make it about diversity per se as like DEI and all that stuff. And
that is such an important and critical mission.
Absolutely. I didn't want to make it so like you have to care about this as like this whole like cultural or political space. I wanted to make it about the practice itself and what we're doing as practitioners and what healthcare is doing as practitioners. And so, yeah, I adjusted how I was framing it to make sure that I ingratiated all of us as practitioners to know we can all be diverse practitioners. We can all do this work. It does not have to come from just a diverse person. It can come from all of us, really, if we just patiently understand that we're okay with the learning space, with the exploration space, and with the idea that there are other sciences that we can use as resources to consider evidence or research as number one, like we can use other spaces.
I agree. Thank you. Thank you, Ingrid, for like reflecting on your process to understand like the practice that you've been doing to put it into language to communicate for the rest of us so that we can join you on this journey together to improve our field and the services that we offer our incredibly diverse patients and clients. This has been such a fun conversation for me. Again, thank you so much for joining me here. If people want to connect with you and learn more about you and the work that you do, how can they connect with you?
The easiest way to connect with me is through my email, miseducatedslp@gmail.com. The Advocate SLP in Instagram is also another space in which I respond to because that's my personal Instagram. There's also the podcast Miseducated SLP on Instagram that I check pretty regularly. And so that's how I have really responded to people. So those three platforms are probably the strongest in which you'll get some response from me, for sure.
Excellent. All right. Well, then I think that this kind of concludes our conversation. So I want to encourage our listeners to do more learning, ask more questions, be comfortable with not knowing answers. It's uncomfortable. So it takes getting used to. And that I hope this conversation has nourished your brain so that your practice can flourish and you go out there and be awesome. And again, Ingrid, thank you.
Thank you so much, Leah. I have appreciated being part of this experience, and I hope we get to speak more because I think it would be amazing to continue to grow this relationship. So I hope we get to.
Ooh, excellent. Me too.